This hour's top stories: fresh Saudi airstrikes on the Yemeni capital leaves at least one person dead. The EU says significant differences still remain between the bloc and Britain in talks on post-Brexit trade agreement. And Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon says she wants to hold a second independence referendum as soon as next year. Welcome to the program. Our top story: Saudi Arabia has carried out a series of airstrikes on Yemen. The attacks targeted the capital, Sana'a, killing at least one civilian and injuring another one. Saudi Arabia launched a devastating war on Yemen in March of 2015. The war has killed tens of thousands of Yemenis, mostly civilians. Millions more have been displaced. The conflict has caused a dire humanitarian situation in Yemen, with the UN calling it the worst crisis in the world. Abdul Latif Al-Washali joined us earlier with an update on the latest Saudi airstrikes on the Yemeni capital.
It's been an escalating by the Saudi coalition. We think it's because of the likely to be falling in the hands of the Yemeni army, the city of Marib. There has been about three strikes on Attan mountain, which has caused the death of a citizen, and another one was wounded. It's been three other airstrikes on the military college. The damages of houses and properties of citizens is something held in these airstrikes. Tens of other airstrikes was shelled and waged on the Amran city and Saada city, and there's been also in Al-Hudaydah city, which is a breach for the Stockholm agreement.
Supporters of Iraqi cleric Muqtada as-Sadr have filled the streets of Baghdad to voice support for him ahead of the country's parliamentary elections. The crowd held signs and waved Iraqi flags to show support for the Sadr movement. Muqtada as-Sadr has said his party will participate in parliamentary elections slated for June of next year. The Sadr movement is seeking to gain a majority. According to a new Iraqi law, a party with a majority of seats in parliament can form a new government. Journalist and commentator Said Mohsen Abbas says American interference in Iraq will be the main problem for any party that wins the upcoming parliamentary elections.
The real problem, ultimately, whether it's the Al-Arar bloc or whoever comes into power, is American interference in Iraq. That is, without a doubt, the fundamental problem. You know, the only reason the Americans have just recently withdrawn, or they've said last week that they're going to withdraw 2,200 troops, is because the rocket barrages that have been coming in from a lot of the people who are actually fed up with the American interference in Iraq have got to the point where actually the Americans are getting a message. But of course, one can't trust the U.S. You know, they said they would support the Kurds in northern Syria. They pulled out. They said they would tackle ISIS, when in fact they're the ones who produce ISIS and let them loose in Iraq. They say they're going to rebuild Iraq, but they did none of that at all. I mean, Iraq is in a terrible condition, with unemployment, psychological problems, with a collapsed economy. Not only that, the Americans are blackmailing the Iraqi government with a $65 billion fund, which they should give to the Iraqis but refuse to.
Now, the release of a Palestinian hunger striker this week has been described as an encouragement for those who are struggling against Israel's notorious detention policy in the occupied territories. Palestinian prisoner Maher al-Akhras believes the protest action has been successful.
The Israeli regime finally released Palestinian prisoner Maher al-Akhras on Thursday,
Al-Akhras had refused food for over 100 days in protest against his so-called administrative detention. He is now extremely frail, but says his prolonged hunger strike, which he ended on November 8th, has paid off. Al-Akhras says his freedom is the freedom of his people and an important win over the Israeli occupation. The 49-year-old Palestinian farmer from Salat ad-Daher in the north of the occupied West Bank began his hunger strike in July. His decision to refuse food was a bid to draw attention to Israel's widely condemned use of administrative detention. His hunger strike, which brought him to the brink of death, made headlines around the world, once again highlighting Israel's gross violation of human rights against Palestinian prisoners. His refusal to eat triggered a wave of condemnation of his administrative detention. The United Nations, the European Union, many rights groups and governments called for his release. Al-Akhras was one of hundreds of Palestinian inmates currently held in Israeli jails without charge or trial. Israel extensively uses its notorious administrative detention policy against Palestinians. That policy allows the regime to hold the inmates indefinitely without providing any evidence of wrongdoing. The notorious detention policy in Palestine is nothing new. It has been ongoing for many decades. It dates back to the British Mandate and has since been used by the Israeli regime.
The British developed it to crush the Palestinian anti-colonial movement when Britain was the colonial power until 1948. The Israelis have picked it up. They have refined it. They play cat and mouse with hundreds and hundreds of prisoners, as you say, detained without charge, and who are sometimes even taken to the very day of their release, sometimes even allowed outside the prison gates and immediately snatched, kidnapped and taken back inside for another 6-month period.
Well over 300 Palestinians, including two minors, were held in Israeli jails without charge or trial as of August. For those who are held under this policy, there is no possibility of appeal or even knowing what accusations are brought against them. Israeli forces in the occupied territories can practically detain anyone and hold them indefinitely. As the health condition of Al-Akhras worsened over the past few weeks, calls grew on Israel to release him and other administrative detainees, but as always, Israel remains defiant. The regime has also refused to take measures to even improve the extremely poor conditions in its jails.
For Palestinians, spending time in Israeli jails is a common experience. Some estimates show around 1/5 of the total Palestinian population has gone through detention in Israeli jails since 1967. That's over 700,000 people. There are currently several thousand Palestinian inmates, including a large number of children in Israeli prisons. Appalling conditions and harsh treatment are indispensable parts of the terrible experience. Many Palestinian inmates say Israeli forces tortured them while in custody. Many have also complained of medical negligence. Reports show inmates who suffer from dangerous chronic illnesses are only given painkillers. Meanwhile, poor prison conditions are making incarceration increasingly dangerous during the coronavirus pandemic. For instance, dozens of Palestinian prisoners have tested positive for the highly contagious disease inside the Israeli prison of Gilboa. Those with pre-existing health conditions could easily lose their lives. Protests against unbearable prison conditions have grown in recent years, including several high-profile hunger strikes, but they have rarely forced Israel to take action.
We need to start telling their stories, because the story of the prisoners is the story of the Palestinian struggle for freedom. It's a central aspect of that struggle, and I think we need to tell that story. We need to organize in a way where groups in different countries around the world can focus on particular groups of Palestinian prisoners, men, women, children, and tell their story and tell the whole world the horrors that Palestinians suffer.
The international community has been pretty loud in condemning Israel's violation of human rights against the Palestinians, including the rights violations inside its prisons. But the verbal condemnation has done little to change the regime's behavior. This could have been much different if governments had used their economic leverage with Israel to pressure it to change direction.
The EU and the UK say there are still major stumbling blocks to achieve a post-Brexit trade deal, with time quickly running out for an agreement. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said the two sides are still seeking to bridge, quote, substantial and important differences. He tried to shift the burden of responsibility for reaching an agreement on the EU, saying a deal can be struck if they want to do it. Meanwhile, EU chief negotiator Michel Barnier said the same significant divergence persists in the talks. One EU diplomat also said there are only a few days left for the talks. Face-to-face Brexit trade talks will resume in London this weekend as the December the 31st deadline looms. Negotiations are still centered on three main issues, namely fishing, state aid, and dispute resolution. Remaining in that part of the world, British media say Scotland's First Minister is seeking to hold a second independence referendum as soon as next year. Nicola Sturgeon said that she anticipates the vote will take place in the earlier part of the next Scottish Parliament. That term begins next year. Scotland held its first referendum on independence from Britain in 2014. 55% of voters said no. But 14 recent polls have shown a majority of Scots now support independence. Such sentiment has gained momentum following Britain's exit from the European Union. Widespread criticism over the British government's handling of the pandemic is contributed to. London is against a new referendum in the near future. It says the previous vote should be respected. Germany's total confirmed coronavirus infections has passed 1 million. Cases jumped after the Robert Koch Institute on Friday reported more than 22,000 new infections. A virus surge in the past few weeks has prompted Germany to extend a partial lockdown into January. Also on Friday, Russia registered a record high of more than 27,500 new cases. That pushes the country's total tally to over 2.2 million. Russia's death toll is nearing 39,000. In Ukraine, a record number of more than 16,000 daily cases were registered Friday. Ukraine's total infections now stand at nearly 694,000. Overall deaths are almost 12,000 there. Earlier, I spoke to our correspondent in Moscow, Marina Kurtunova, about the sharp increase in daily coronavirus cases in Russia.
So Moscow remains the leader in terms of the number of new cases. Over the past day, 7,918 cases were found here. In second place is St. Petersburg with half the figure. On November 26, Moscow authorities once again extended restrictive measures in Moscow in connection with the epidemic, and this time until mid of January, January 15, until the end of New Year holidays. So COVID hysteria forced tens of thousands of beds across the country to be registered, and a total of almost 500,000 health workers, doctors and nurses sent to the red zones.
Turkey has condemned an EU call for sanctions against Ankara over President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's recent visit to northern Cyprus. Ankara has accused the EU of being prejudiced and disconnected from the realities on Cyprus. On Thursday, the European Parliament agreed a non-binding resolution that urges tough sanctions on Ankara. Earlier this month, the Turkish president visited northern Cyprus. That's a breakaway Turkish Cypriot state in north of Cyprus. Only Ankara recognizes northern Cyprus as an independent state 46 years after Cyprus was divided. During that trip, Erdogan said there should be talks for a solution on the basis of two separate states. In another development, lawyers for the detained Huawei top executive have accused Canadian police of covering up the illegal sharing of data with the United States. Lawyers said the Canadian police sent private information from Meng Wanzhou's electronic devices to the FBI during her arrest 2 years ago. They said the top Canadian law enforcement officer overseeing the arrest tried to cover up for her colleagues. Sergeant Janice Vandergraff said Meng's information had not been sent. That's why Graff previously wrote in her notes that a colleague said it had been. The Huawei top executive was held on a U.S. warrant during a Vancouver stopover in December of 2018. She's been fighting extradition to the U.S., where she faces fraud and conspiracy charges. China says her detention is politically motivated. Three French police officers have been suspended after they were filmed beating and allegedly racially abusing a black man in Paris. That's according to France's police watchdog. The body says an official inquiry is also underway now into the officer's behavior. The victim is a music producer. He said he had been walking around without a face mask and walked into his studio. However, the police followed him inside and physically attacked him using tear gas. The case comes as anger is boiling in France over a new security law approved on Tuesday. The law places restrictions on identifying police officers involved in operations. Critics say the legislation would allow police brutality to go undiscovered and unpunished. The Australian Army says 13 soldiers could face dismissal in relation to a damning report on alleged war crimes in Afghanistan.
At this time, 13 individuals have been issued administrative action notices in relation to the Afghanistan inquiry. At this point in time, no individuals have been separated from the Australian Defence Force. Administrative action includes receiving a notice proposing to terminate the individual's service. The individual then has the opportunity to respond within a minimum of 14 days. The decision maker must consider any written response.
The Australian Army Chief said each matter and individual circumstance will be considered on a case-by-case basis. The move to discharge the soldiers follows a last week report on a years-long investigation. It said Australia's elite special forces unlawfully killed 39 Afghan civilians and protesters. The victims included those killed by summary execution. The report recommended 19 individuals be referred to Australian police, federal police that should be. It also recommended that compensation be paid to the families of the victims. Canberra apologized to Kabul over the alleged war crimes. Well, on those alleged war crimes by the Australian Special Forces in Afghanistan, well, they have caused outrage there. People and rights groups have demanded that the perpetrators be brought to justice. Amin Alami in the capital, Kabul, has also asked some locals about the issue. This is what some of them had to say.
Not only Australian forces, but others will kill us if we continue to ignore each other's will. This is clear that they provided some specific figures with dollars and heavy vehicles while our people are trampled.
It's quite clear that the responsible Australian forces must be prosecuted, and their prosecution process must be widely covered by media outlets to advocate victims' rights.
We want the ICC as a responsible body in this regard to seriously investigate the killing of civilians by Australian forces and punish them.
Killing of civilians is not in line with no law and logic, so the government and international body need to strongly back the rights of the victims and bring the accountable figures to justice.
Those Australian forces who have killed innocent civilians in Oruzgan must be punished. They have claimed to support us, instead they kill us. So the government and international rights bodies must properly investigate the case.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio. We'll be right back.
in the limelight.
Microplastic pollution has been discovered in snow close to the peak of Mount Everest, the world's highest mountain. With plastic debris revealed in 2018 at the deepest point on Earth, the Mariana Trench, it is now clear that humanity's litter has polluted the entire planet. The tiny plastic fibers were found within a few hundred meters of the top of the 8,850-meter mountain at a spot known as the Balcony. Microplastics were found in all the snow samples collected from 11 locations on Mount Everest, ranging from 5,300 meters up to 8,440 meters high. The article you're about to hear has been written by journalist Damien Carrington, environment editor for The Guardian. The piece is titled "Microplastic Pollution Found Near Summit of Mount Everest." Please stay with us for more of Damien Carrington's article. Microplastic pollution has been discovered in snow close to the peak of Mount Everest, the world's highest mountain. With plastic debris revealed in 2018 at the deepest point on Earth, the Mariana Trench in the Pacific Ocean, it is now clear that humanity's litter has polluted the entire planet. The tiny plastic fibers were found within a few hundred meters of the top of the 8,850-meter-high mountain, at a spot known as the Balcony. Microplastics were found in all snow samples collected from 11 locations on Mount Everest, ranging from 5,300 meters high to 8,440 meters high. The highest concentrations of microplastics were found around base camp, where climbers and trekkers spend most of their time. The microplastic fibers were most likely to have come from clothing, tents and ropes used by mountaineers, scientists and others. Other recent discoveries of microplastic pollution in remote parts of the Swiss Alps and French Pyrenees indicate that particles can also be carried by wind from further afield. It really surprised me to find microplastics in every single snow sample I analysed, said Imogen Napper, the University of Plymouth, who led the new research. Imogen Napper added, "Mount Everest is somewhere I have always considered remote and pristine. To know we are polluting near the top of the tallest mountain on Earth is a real eye-opener. With microplastics so ubiquitous in our environment, it's time to focus on appropriate environmental solutions," she said. "We need to protect and care for our planet." Reducing, reusing and recycling larger items of plastic waste is important, according to Imogen Napper, as they can be broken down into microplastics when discarded into the environment. But many microplastics are shed from clothing made from synthetic fibers, synthetic fabrics, and she said a focus on better fabrics was needed, as well as using natural fibers such as cotton. Millions of tons of plastic are lost into the environment every year. It can contain toxic additives and carry harmful microbes and is known to injure wildlife that mistakes it for food. People also consume microplastics via food and water and breathe them in, although the health impact on humans is not yet known. There have been long-standing concerns about litter on Mount Everest, which was climbed by at least 880 individuals in 2019. But the new study is the first of its kind to assess microplastic pollution on Mount Everest, which is less than 5 millimeters in size, and therefore the microplastic is too small to be picked up. The study published in the journal One Earth analyzed samples collected by a National Geographic expedition in 2019. The scientists found an average of 30 microplastic particles per liter of water in the snow samples and 119 particles per liter of water in the most contaminated sample. They also assessed stream water samples from 8 locations, but only 3 had microplastics, perhaps as the streams were able to wash away contamination. In her previous work, Imogen Napper had found that each cycle of a washing machine can release 700,000 microscopic plastic fibers, and that plastic bags that claimed to be biodegradable were still intact after 3 years in the natural environment. Microplastic and nanoplastic particles are now discoverable in human organs, thanks to a new technique which has been developed. Microplastics have polluted the entire planet, from Arctic snow and alpine soils to the deepest oceans. People are also known to consume them via food and water and to breathe them in, but their potential impact on human health is not yet known. The researchers expect to find the particles in human organs and have identified chemical traces of plastic in tissue. But isolating and characterizing such minuscule fragments is difficult, and contamination from plastics in the air is also a challenge. To test their technique, they added particles to 47 samples of lung, liver, spleen, and kidney tissue obtained from a tissue bank established to study neurodegenerative diseases. Their results showed that the microplastics could be detected in virtually every sample. The scientists, whose work is being presented at a meeting of the American Chemical Society, said their technique would enable other researchers to determine contamination levels in human organs around the world. It would be naive to believe that there is a plastic everywhere, but not in us, according to Rolf Holden of Arizona State University. Rolf Holden added, "We are now providing a research platform that will allow us and others to look for what is invisible. These microplastic particles too small for the naked eye to see. The risk to health really resides in the small particles." The analytical method developed allows the researchers to identify dozens of types of plastic, including the polyethylene terephthalate, or PET, used in plastic drink bottles, and the polyethylene used in plastic bags. They found bisphenol A, or BPA, a chemical used to make plastics, in all 47 samples. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, is concerned about BPA because it is a reproductive, developmental, and systematic toxicant in animal studies. The researchers examined lung, liver, spleen, and kidney tissue, as these organs are likely to be exposed to microplastic particles or to collect them. Charles Rolski, another member of the team which issued the report, said, "In a few short decades, we have gone from seeing plastic as a wonderful benefit to considering it as a threat. Microplastics are those less than 5 millimeters in diameter, and nanoplastics have a diameter of less than 1/1000th of a millimeter. Both form largely from the abrasion of larger pieces of plastic dumped into the environment. Research in wildlife and laboratory animals has linked exposure to tiny plastic particles to infertility, inflammation, and even cancer."
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of al-Baqir was given to the Imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
قال الإمام الباقر عليه السلام أول شيء خلقه من خلقه الشيء الذي جميع الأشياء منه وهو الماء.
Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam stated, "The first thing that Allah created from His creation was the substance that all things come from, and that is water."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. We find in a very interesting discussion between one of the students of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam by the name of Jabir bin Yazid al-Jufi with his teacher, who is none other than Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam himself. Now, this dialogue between Jabir bin Yazid al-Jufi and Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam is a very long discussion. It is a very long conversation. But this conversation and this dialogue between the student and the teacher and the student, we find that there are excellent and golden pieces of advice. There is wisdom beyond imagination. Now, one of the pieces of advice which was given to Jabir bin Yazid al-Jufi in this dialogue between these two is where Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam says, "O Jabir, regard as much the little livelihood from Allah to be loyal to gratefulness, and regard as little your obedience to Allah to belittle yourself and to ask Allah for forgiveness. Drive away the present evil from yourself through the present knowledge which you have, and put into effect the present knowledge sincerely." In such few words, dear friends, we find that Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, in this dialogue with his student Jabir bin Yazid al-Jufi, puts through such amazing words of wisdom and knowledge. Imam al-Baqir says that we should regard even the least amount of livelihood which we have from Allah and be grateful for that little livelihood. How many people are there in the world whom are starving to death? How many people are in the world who don't have an income? How many people are in the world who, under unjust sanctions, have little to no income, have little to no food, have little to no medicine? And so Imam al-Baqir tells Jabir here, regard your livelihood, even if it is little, to be a great blessing from Allah. And furthermore, regard your obedience and your worship and your good deeds to be little. Do not become arrogant, thinking that your good deeds and your obedience to Allah is such a great thing. He says, always remember to ask for forgiveness, and in order to drive away and remove the evil that is within us because of our own decisions and our own choices, is to put the knowledge which we have into effect sincerely. Meaning, we know that something is wrong, then sincerely put that knowledge into action and don't do something which is wrong. On the other hand, we know that something is right. Put that knowledge into effect sincerely and do that which is right. Beautiful pieces of advice given to Jabir bin Yazid al-Ju'fi in this dialogue by his teacher, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam. And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
Just to let you know that when you hear these fatwa from our mujtahideen, you know, people ask this question, oh, mujtahids are giving fatwa, where does it come from? Well, the fatwa in most cases basically are based on the ahadith of the imams of the Ahlul Bayt. Or even if it's not exactly from the wordings of the ahadith, it is based on the principles derived from the Quran and the ahadith of the Ahlul Bayt. Qatada asked a question. فَأَخْبِرْنِي عَنِ الْجُبْنِ. Go back to the cheese. He says, oh Imam, tell me about the cheese. What is the ruling about it? And Imam laughed at him, in a way smiled at him, تَبَسَّمَ Abu Ja'far, and said, رَجَعَتْ مَسَائِلُكَ إِلَى هَذَا. You had come with so many questions, and this is the question you are putting in forward? You know, asking me about cheese? He says, well, you know, I'm confused about this issue. So Imam says, لا بأس به. There is no problem in cheese. It is halal, you can eat. Now this faqih of Basra says, إِنَّهُ رُبَّمَا جُعَتْ فِيهِ إِنْفَحَتُ الْمَيِّتِ. But sometimes when they make the cheese, they use the rennet from an animal which was mayyit. Mayyit means either dead by itself or was not slaughtered according to Islamic method. So it was not a zabiha. Imam says, laysa bihi ba's. There is no problem. Still there is no problem. Even if that cheese contained the rennet from an animal which was not slaughtered in the Islamic manner. Why in al infaha laysa laha uruqun wala fiha damun wala laha adhmun? Imam says this rennet, this enzyme, doesn't have veins in it, there is no blood in it, there is no bones in it, and therefore, you know, there is no problem in it.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
By artificially delaying the industry's inevitable decline at American taxpayers' expense, the U.S. government has made it that much harder to make the necessary transition to clean energy sources, says Brett Wilkins, writer, in an article published under the heading, Time to Cut Dirty Energy Lifeline. Report details how fossil fuel industry feasted on COVID-19 relief programs. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. In a year in which the United States has already suffered 16 climate-driven extreme weather events, causing more than $1 billion in economic damages, and as millions of American workers face loss of essential unemployment benefits due to congressional inaction, a report published recently reveals that the Trump administration has given fossil fuel companies as much as $15.2 billion in direct relief, and tens of billions more indirectly through federal COVID-19 recovery programs since March. The report by Bailout Watch, Public Citizen, and Friends of the Earth, entitled Bailout and Propped Up, tracks taxpayer funds flowing to fossil fuel companies since pandemic-related bailouts began. It found a total of $110 billion in direct and indirect benefits went to 66 companies, including Bitfin, $10.4 and $15.2 billion in direct disbursements to coal, oil, and gas companies that are largely responsible for the worsening climate emergency. Here's a breakdown. According to the report, at least $5.5 billion went to 70 money-losing polluters via the Coronavirus Act Relief and Economic Security, that is CARES Act, $582 million in direct subsidized loans were approved for 37 mid-sized fossil fuel and related companies through the Federal Reserve's Main Street Lending Program. $4.3 to $9.1 billion in forgivable loans went to at least 25,931 companies through the Small Business Administration's Paycheck Protection Program. At least 229 oil and gas companies received waivers for fees normally paid to drill on public land, giveaways that cost the government a minimum of $4.5 million in lost revenue, and likely far more. The report found that five fossil fuel companies, Diamondback Energy, EOG Resources, Marathon Petroleum, Phillips 66, and Valero, received more than 10% of the $110 billion in direct benefits, including tax refunds and indirect support through the issuance of bonds, even if they were losing money. Reassured by the Fed's actions, private investors purchased more fossil fuel bonds, generating some $100 billion in additional indirect benefits. When the pandemic hit last spring, President Donald Trump's corporate cronies made sure the fossil fuel industry was able to squeeze whatever favors they could out of the resulting economic rescues, wrote Alan Zibo, research director of Public Citizens Corporate Presidency Project and a co-author of the report. The Biden administration and the next Congress will have a golden opportunity to ensure efforts to rescue the economy no longer benefit the very companies most responsible for the devastation caused by the climate change, he added. Christopher Kubecki, a bailout watch analyst and co-author of the report, added that the fossil fuel industry took advantage of the pandemic to put their hands out for help, escaping a financial mess of their own making. And their allies in the federal government rode to the rescue. By artificially delaying the industry's inevitable decline at taxpayers' expense, the government has made it that much harder to make the necessary transition to clean energy sources, he added. The report comes just after members of Congress headed home on vacation without having passed a new coronavirus relief bill, and as millions of Americans face the grim prospect of losing essential unemployment benefits as the CARES Act is set to expire at the end of the year. Last week, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez excoriated Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on the floor of the House of Representatives, accusing him of abandoning American people. While thousands of people in Texas lined up for food lines, hospitals no longer have beds to house the sick, and 30 million Americans are on the brink of eviction, McConnell dismissed the Senate, said Ocasio-Cortez. Every single day when we go back to our communities, people are asking us, where is there going to be help? Is there going to be a second stimulus check? Are we going to get the resources that we need? Climate activists and many economists argue that giving money to those most culpable for carbon emissions is the exact opposite of what governments should be doing. One economist says that instead of selling fossil fuel bonds, governments should be prompting green climate bonds. With a mere fraction of the COVID-19 recovery funds, central banks could support climate protection, wrote World Future Council chief economist Matthias Kroll recently. He continued, the price for coping with systematically relevant climate crisis appears almost to be a bargain. With a fraction of the funds used to overcome the COVID-19 crisis or the banking crisis of 2008, the central banks could trigger investments in climate protection of a magnitude that would make the 1.5 degrees centigrade target under the Paris Agreement achievable. The central banks would not even need to create additional money for this. It would be sufficient to replace expiring assets from previous purchase programs with new types of green climate bonds. A May 2020 study by the World Future Council estimated the cost of a global climate bailout at a relatively modest $175 million per year, resulting in a one-third reduction in worldwide carbon emissions by the end of the decade. We need to start thinking about how to practically finance a Green New Deal and a swift transition to 100% renewable energy, and central banks should start playing a proactive role, wrote Kroll. Let's treat the climate emergency at what it is, and let's bail out the climate too.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters 7300 kHz for the Indian subcontinent and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and IranSat or BAT 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio. We all know that Islam and the teachings of Islam, especially within the school of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, it's not something that is confined to mere ibadah or acts of worship. It is not something that just looks at the personal side and the, if you want to call it, the selfish side of an individual. How can an individual get better? How can an individual reach Allah? and so on and so forth. Islam is a religion, even if you have to go into the mystical side of it, the Gnosis side of Islam, we see that the final journey, according to the mystics, is when a person goes with the community towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, or a mystic is able, after he has done his own personal journey, to take others with him. So we say that Islam, in its essence, is a religion that is for community. It is a religion that is for, you know, others. It is not something that we should just look at as being an individualistic or something that is of, you know, our own needs, our own desires. In that regard, today I would like to share with you a tradition from the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, which speaks about two kinds of people. That if these people are sound, are fair, you know, are just, the community will be just, the community will be going towards a correct path. But if these two individuals are corrupt, are not sound, you know, they do all sorts of evil and bad things, then the community in general will also be going towards destruction, deviation, and so on, and corruption also. So the Holy Prophet has said, there are two kinds of people from my community, who if they are sound, my community will be sound. And if they are corrupt, my community will become corrupt. The community here means the Ummah, the greater Muslim community. Because these two individuals that we will mention, the Holy Prophet mentions, obviously after being asked, you know, kind of impact the entire Muslim community, and not just a small group of individuals. So obviously the Holy Prophet was asked, in Ya Rasulullah, and who are these people? Who are these two individuals that, or these two groups of people, if they are corrupt, the community will be corrupt. And if they are fine, and if they are good, the community will be good. The Holy Prophet replied, the jurists and the rulers. That if the fuqaha and the umara, that is the leaders, the rulers of the society, and the fuqaha and the jurists of the society, meaning those who are responsible for the spiritual needs of the community and those who are responsible for the physical needs of the community, if both of these are corrupt, obviously we see the community will be going in the wrong direction. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, first of all, to give us good fuqaha and good rulers over the Muslim ummah, inshaAllah, and to make us, inshaAllah, of those who are on the right. And if we see something going wrong, we are able to change it or say something about it. InshaAllah, until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
That was the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Yasser Ibrahim, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
The debate.